Hello and welcome to What a Scream, the horror movie podcast where I, your host, Egrain, chats with a special guest every week about horror films. And in particular, we talk about a certain subject that I've previously randomly chosen, and we each pick a film to do with that subject and then we discuss them. This week, however, is not so random. To coincide with the BFI's Dario Argento season, I am talking to Michael Blythe about Dario Argento. I know I've already done an episode. This is Dario Argento part 2. The first episode, you can go all the way back. It was episode 50. Episode 46. There we go. Episode 46 that I did with Steve Urina, where we talked about Suspiria and the bird with the crystal plumage. But this time, myself and Michael Blythe are talking about Tenebrae and Deep Red. So I hope you enjoy this episode where we really deep dive into these two films and kind of what intrinsically makes a Dario Argento film. So I would like to welcome to What a Scream, Michael Blythe. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Would you like to introduce yourself to listeners and let them know what you do?
Sure. I am, until very recently, was the senior film programmer for BFI Festivals. So for 17 years, I worked on the London Film Festival and BFI Flare, which is the queer film festival that they run. Just recently made the decision to leave the BFI and to kind of embark on some different projects. So that's very recent. So I'm not quite sure what those other projects are yet, but there's a few things lining up. But before I left, one of the last things I did at BFI was to program this season of Argento films, which is screening this month. So it was a really nice way to kind of end, and a nice thing that's kind of carried over slightly past me leaving as well. So I'm going to be in introducing a couple of films in the next few weeks.
Great. So before we get into that, I'll just do the usual housekeeping that I do with episodes. How did you get into horror? And do you remember what the first horror film was you ever saw?
Do you know, I have absolutely no idea what the first one was. I wish I did, but I've just always loved horror films as long as I can remember. Since I was, you know, kind of first watching films, I was always drawn to anything that was a bit darker and a bit more kind of on the horrific side. And fortunately, I had parents who never really stopped me watching anything. I mean, maybe that people are like, that's a bad thing. But I mean, for me, it was great. I think my mum especially saw that I was never really scared or kind of affected by them. I was just fascinated. I was just so interested and wanting to kind of consume and would want to talk about them afterwards. So she was kind of, within reason, would let me watch most things. And it just kind of grew from then. So I've just always been obsessed, and it's never waned for a second.
Ah, yeah, good old 80s parenting. So chatting about our theme for this week is, of course, Dario Argento, which is quite ironic because one of the first horror films I ever saw was Suspiria, accidentally. I'm sure it was on Channel 4 and I didn't actually know what it was until a couple of years ago. Its images were just burned into my little 5-year-old brain. Let's chat a little bit about the BFI season. Do you want to let listeners know a little bit about that?
Sure. So Cinecittà have kind of recently done a restoration of most of Argento's work. So it's a almost full retrospective of his feature films. There's a couple of omissions. We're not screening Giallo, and we're not screening, what's the other one? Dracula 3D. I'm sure they have their fans, but we're also not screening any of the TV work. So like the work that he did for Doors into Darkness or Masters of Horror, for example, we're not showing those. It's just the kind of feature film work that he did. I mean, the new restorations look beautiful. So it's, you know, worthwhile, even if people have seen, if you've seen Suspiria 50 times and you think you know it, watching these new restorations, they look absolutely incredible. So I'd recommend coming to see, even if you've seen stuff before. And if you haven't, what a beautiful way to kind of start your love affair with Dario.
I am so excited. I'm going to be there for the In Conversation with Argento, as well as the Suspiria screening, which is a nice way to kind of round it all out. And I'm very excited to see it on the big screen.
And it's exciting as well because the In Conversation is going to be hosted by Pranoy Bailey Bond, who directed Censor. So it'd be really nice. I think it's really, I always really enjoy watching two filmmakers talking to each other and a kind of newer emerging filmmaker. And I think Censor was great. I loved it so much. And there was a lot of the kind of visual language in Censor and a lot of the kind of lighting and this stuff that felt very influenced by Argento and particularly Suspiria. So it'll be really fascinating seeing the two of them talking together.
Yeah, especially because Argento was the victim of quite a lot of video nasty lists, as we'll talk about one of the films coming up. I take it you're a fan of Argento.
Well, no, I'm not. Don't really
Nah,
liking
nah, nah, nah.
that.
Take
Yeah,
it or
no, I
leave
really do. I mean, I
it.
think I definitely remember the first Argento film I saw was also Suspiria, and I remember it was like I had my kind of one friend at high school, and we used to just talk about horror films every day. And he had a videotape of it, and we used to exchange tapes every day and kind of watch each other's recommendations. And I kind of got home from school, put it on, and I just remember being like, as the most people probably feel when they watch Suspiria for the first time, just like, what the hell is this? Like, where am I? And just, I remember reading a review for it once that said, Suspiria is like the kind of the horror film that you imagine horror films are like when you're too young to watch them. And I thought that was such a beautiful way to describe it, because it's like it is a nightmare. Like every second of that film is horrific. There's no moment of, well, there's moments of kind of levity and there's moments of not, kind of violence or kind of horror in the traditional sense. It's so infused with dread that there's no escape from it. It's like this kind of permanent nightmare that you're in. So yeah, I think that's, I always say to people, while it's not the most indicative of his career, because actually kind of the Giallo work makes up most of his filmography, Suspiria is such a great way to start, because it's just like nothing else you've ever seen. It's like just going in kind of fresh and watching Suspiria is just like one of the greatest kind of like assaults to your senses that you'll ever experience.
Yeah, I love Dario Argento. I'm sure many people know because I am a massive Giallo fan. And he's just such an auteur. Like, a Dario Argento film, and it's, a lot of the directors we can be like, oh, the lighting or the cinematography, that that's that director. But he's also his soundtracks, obviously, because he works very closely with Goblin. Like, just listening to it, you're like, even if you didn't see it and you just heard it, you'd be like, that's a Dario Argento film. And I just love that well-roundedness of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Which one was your favorite, Argento?
I have a very soft spot for Bird with a Crystal Plumage because it was the first of his giallos that I saw. But I also love Deep Red, which is something we're going to be talking about. But Tenebrae, this was my first viewing of Tenebrae, and
Oh,
I've
wow.
fallen in love with that as well. Like, it's just absolute wild, and I just love that, the wildness of Italian giallo. I just think it's great. So yes, I guess that leads us nicely on then to the first film, which was your choice. Would you like to introduce it and give us a brief synopsis, please?
Sure. So my choice is Tenebrae.
I've read all your books, Mr. Neal. The book deals with a murder committed with an old-fashioned open razor, right? This girl, too, was killed with a razor, and your book's pages stuffed into her mouth.
Can I ask you something? If someone is killed with a Smith & Wesson revolver, do you go and interview the president of Smith & Wesson?
Peter, you can't let me down now. We're within 2 days of making a deal. Please, stay just until Friday.
My life is in danger. There's no deal in the world worth risking my life for.
Not anxiety or fear, but freedom. You wrote those words, page 46. Freedom to strike again, Peter.
Listen, don't hang up. We have to talk.
You told me how, Peter Neal. You and me together. We've just begun.
Which is my personal favorite Argento. I think that I remember when I first saw it, and I saw it. It was the film I saw after Suspiria, and I remember being quite disappointed with it and thinking like, oh, this is not kind of what I thought it was going to be. And then it kind of stayed with me. I watched it again. It was like a couple of viewings in, and I kind of saw it. It just kind of unfolded for me. And then you realize it's just as intricate and ornate and beautiful and, otherworldly as Suspiria, but just in a completely different way. But the film is about an American crime novelist who goes to Rome on a kind of book tour, and basically discovers that someone is killing people referencing his novels. And then, you know, the mystery unfolds, the hunt to find the killer. As with most Argento films, it's kind of hard to really give a full synopsis because, number one, you obviously don't want to give spoilers, but also it's really hard to explain his films because they quite often don't make a huge amount of sense. I'd say Tenebrae makes more sense than some, but even I watch it sometimes and I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot that. Or like, what's, oh yeah, that's kind of links them. But I think that, you know, it's no kind of criticism. I think that quite often plot is secondary to his, you know, in his films. And I think that they're kind of, you know, he uses plots as a way to tell or to, you know, to get to set pieces or to tell certain things, to kind of drive mood, to atmosphere, all that kind of stuff. So it's not that he can't tell stories, he can. I think that Deep Red is a really great example of a more kind of tight storytelling that he can do. He just doesn't care that much. I think he is interested in mood, in atmosphere, and all these kind of different things. And actually, you know, I think it's why Suspiria is one that's so loved, because he kind of, it allowed him to kind of really get rid of the kind of giallo kind of plot shackles and just venture out into this otherworldly kind of, you know, world of no rules, I guess. So yeah, that's kind of Tenebrae in a nutshell, basically. Crime writer, killings, murder mystery. That's a terrible synopsis, wasn't it?
No, it was good. Because, I mean, we do spoilers, so obviously we'll chat about everything as it goes on. But, like, you don't want to give it all away right up front.
Well, that was basically my way of being, like, my greatest downfall as a film person is I'm really terrible at recounting what plots are for films. So that's, yeah, so I always be like, it's kind of about this, and then this happens, and yeah, it's great. Watch it yourself and you'll know the plot.
I'm really bad because at the end of all my synopses, I basically just go, well, shit goes south and that's it.
I mean, which is kind of actually most Argento films that works anyway.
Right. So. So this film was a return to the giallo genre for Argento after he went kind of supernatural, obviously, with Suspiria and Inferno. And it's, I think after watching it, I refer to it as the Scream of the Argento film series. It's so self-referential, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And in really interesting ways as well, because I think that, you know, Argento is, I mean, I think the ways in which it's self-referential particularly are about his approach to kind of gender, the way in which he treats women in his films, which, you know, he's quite kind of critical about. And I think that he's a filmmaker that's come under a lot of scrutiny for his treatment of women. And I don't think that's unjust. I think that there are lots of ways in which you see quite protracted and sadistic kind of deaths of women in his films, that there is a kind of glee and a pleasure with which these scenes unfold. But it's not as simple as that. I think that there is, you know, there's a lot of kind of interesting kind of gender stuff going on in his films. There's a lot of interesting stuff around sexuality and about expected roles. So I think this was a really great moment for him to kind of fight back on that and to kind of be critical about it, but in quite an amusing, quite witty way. It was also kind of inspired by his own experience with a fan, or maybe not a fan, who had been kind of stalking him a bit and saying that basically attacking him for the kind of psychological impacts that his films would have on people. So I think, again, it was like, it was partly about his treatment of women, but also about the idea of the film director and the kind of horror director in particular as being someone that can affect and can basically kind of, you know, have a negative impact on society.
Yeah, there's quite a cheeky wink scene where the novelist Peter Neal is being interviewed by a feminist writer. And she's basically saying, you know, like, you treat your women terribly, you're misogynistic, et cetera, et cetera. And it's almost as if, you know, obviously Dario Argento has, this has been said about him. So it's kind of like a cheeky wink to, you know, how he has been portrayed perhaps in the media and in film criticism, which is kind of like, on the one hand, like I said, I love giallo, but we do have to have that criticism of it as just like the slasher genre, which it influenced. Yeah. It can be really misogynistic. And, you know, how do you weigh that up when you are a feminist? It's quite difficult, but sometimes you just have to be like, right, well, this is a product of its time. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what's so interesting about that scene as well, because, like, you know, the journalist Tilda is kind of, you know, talking about his like hairy macho bullshit. And then it kind of cuts, like, the interview ends, and then they're like, oh, hey, how are you? Like, haven't seen you in ages. And they've known each other, for, you know, and they're friends and stuff. And, you know, he's like, you gave me a really hard time. And she's like, ah, you can take it. And it's kind of, what's really interesting is, like, you've got this kind of level of, you know, okay, so your films are this, you know, or your novels are this. But even she, the interviewer, knows him better, that knows there's more complexity there, that knows there's more to his character than just this one thing. So it's kind of like revealing again that even these accusations of misogyny, for example, that might be kind of thrown around, as I said, not unjustly, but there's not as simple as that. There's always more to explore. There's always more to a personal, to a filmmaker, to an artist. I think it's a really clever way of doing that. And I think that, you know, I kind of mentioned before that, you know, kind of queerness is something that that's kind of a very big part of Argento's films. It doesn't get talked about a huge amount, is also very, very present in Tenebrae. And I think that, you know, in a similar way that you're kind of saying that, you know, as a kind of feminist watching a lot of horror films, you have to kind of navigate your own way through them and kind of find pathways that you can kind of forgive certain things and maybe fight against certain things. Mm. And I think as a queer viewer, I think you experience that similar stuff with horror films, and you're so used to seeing queerness as perverse or kind of disgusting or as a kind of butt of a joke. And actually Argento never does any of those things. You know, he kind of sidesteps them and talks about them in really interesting ways. So I think that, you know, again, it's like his queer characters, they're not perfect by any means, but there's something a million times more progressive than the kind of his contemporaries that were making horror films at the time. So I think that when it comes to giallo, which is always a very interesting genre, when it comes to gender, I think that Argento is and will always be the kind of the most progressive, the most kind of interesting of the people that were making those films at the time.
Yeah, I agree. And there's two such instances in the two films we're going to talk about. But in this one, so we see a bisexual woman and her lesbian lover, and the bisexual woman, you know, wants to sleep with men as well. And they both get murdered by the murderer, who turns out to be, you know, spoiler alert, a conservative TV host that calls them like sick and perverted. But the thing I like about this is, like you said, that lens we're looking at, it's not being like, this, you know, these queer lovers deserved it, because it was more like, well, we're condemning conservatism because look at this creepy perverted guy that goes around killing them. And I really like that lens, because like you said, back in the day, we do have these lenses of queer people where it's like the villainous or the monstrous queer. So it's quite refreshing to see a film from like the early 80s to have that sort of condemnation of conservatism.
Mm. There's almost like a kind of playfulness as well with that, with the couple that you're talking about. And you've got the journalist who's your more kind of formal, you know, in the way that she dresses, presents herself, talks. And then you've got her girlfriend who's kind of, you know, for want of a better word, a bit trashier. And she kind of goes around wearing that top with half her boob hanging out. You know, she's like, she's almost like a kind of, you know, she's a kind of parody, it feels like, almost, you know. But there's, I kind of often wonder, like, how much is intentional with Argento, how much I'm putting on and wanting to think more than, you know, and to be like, oh, Argento is exactly what he's doing, he's being totally subversive. But I think that there is something in that moment that he is kind of saying, like, you know, it's these extremes, like people can be very different things, like one community, one person isn't the same. And I think that, you know, he does it in unsubtle ways, he does it in ways that aren't going to please and satisfy everyone. But again, this is, you know, 40 years ago, like, quick, like, lesbians in horror films 40 years ago were pretty much one thing. And I think that, you know, Argento is, you know, at least he's gesturing, he's trying to do something that feels kind of different. Also, that scene when it goes into their house, and it's before the kind of infamous crane shot above the house and that goes over the top, but it has my all-time favorite Argento shot where her girlfriend kind of leans down and kisses Tilda kind of on the side of her mouth, on the cheek, and the camera kind of does this little zoom in. And it is a small 2-second shot. It's the most perfect thing I think he's ever filmed.
I like to think that Dario Argento was definitely a free the nippleist before.
Half of one nipple, I think that was the thing, wasn't it?
So there's other influences in this film which are very well, we've got the Sherlock Holmes kind of influence, which is very in your face because he's quoted quite a few times, and as well as I think it was Kim Newman who referred the dog attack to the Hound of the Baskervilles and said, you know, this is a clear kind of hark back to that Sherlock Holmes story. There's also a bit of a Hitchcockian feel. I don't know whether you agree with that or not.
I do, yeah. I mean, I think the thing is, you know, because when I was writing the introduction for the season, I did a video essay as well, and I kind of, in both of those, kind of criticised the association with Hitchcock and Argento. And I think I was doing it in a way that doesn't dismiss that it exists. I think that they were both making, they're both often making crime thrillers, you know, like mystery films about, you know, who's the killer. There's like amateur sleuths, and there's lots of similarities throughout their works. So I think that the ways in which they part is that Argento is, you know, in the way that I was saying before, not concerned really with plot intricacies, whereas Hitchcock's films are meticulous. You know, it's like everything that happens in a Hitchcock film happens for a reason, and it happens to propel the story. It happens so there's a kind of, you know, there's, you always come away completely satisfied. And if you don't, it was a very deliberate reason why there might be bits of information held back. You know, Argento has an idea and it's, he tells it like a dream. You know, it's like you could watch an Argento film on silent and you would know probably exactly what happened. You couldn't do that with a Hitchcock film. You know, there's so much in the kind of dialogue and there's so much in the way that he gives and holds back information. So I don't think the two are worlds apart in terms of the work that they're creating, but I just think the ways in which they go about it is so radically different. I mean, to me, Argento is more like a avant-garde filmmaker than he is a commercial, you know, genre director. So I think that the two of them sit, they, you know, they live in the same house, but they sleep in different rooms.
Yeah. And I guess this kind of nod to Hitchcock within Tenebrae is also part of one of the themes in the film, which is duality and a mirror reflection. And like you said, they both concentrated on different things. Hitchcock was very, you know, very meticulous, like you said, about plot, but Argento not so much. So it's kind of a mirroring, which is one of the themes of this film. We see a lot of doubles, whether it's Peter Neal and his secretary kind of against Germani, the police detective, and his police assistant. What did you think about this whole like duality theme?
I love that. I mean, I think it's like, you know, it's also very present in this kind of gender binary as well that exists throughout the film, and particularly with the kind of flashbacks, and which is the kind of central figure of the flashbacks, the girl with the red stilettos is played by a trans actress. And I think that, again, it's these kind of gender binaries and this kind of like, you know, he likes to, I think Argento does always like to show two sides of things. You know, I think that's what's really great about him is I think that he's, you know, while it might not be the most sophisticated stuff that he's doing or the stuff that he's saying, it's like I said, like no one was saying this stuff at the time. And actually, you know, his kind of worldview and his perspective is so, there's intrigue there. I think that's the things that make his films so watchable and so kind of rewatchable is, you know, his films are essentially mysteries that you're trying to kind of unfold. And actually the mystery at the center of the film, yeah, okay, maybe, you know, it's kind of cool, or sometimes it doesn't make sense, sometimes it's kind of satisfying, but there's a kind of mystery and there's a kind of intrigue in his films as him as a filmmaker trying to understand people, trying to understand motivations, why does this happen, like, you know, what is this kind of weird dreamy world nightmare that we're living in. I think there's something there that kind of ties into this idea of duality and this idea of like, you know, you might think one thing is something, but actually you look another way and it's something completely different. So I think it's I don't know, it's kind of interesting because I've never really thought about it that much with Tenebrae, but I think it absolutely does exist there.
Yeah, and I guess a running theme through Dario Argento's films is this kind of, you're not looking at the bigger picture. You know, he leads you one way, but in actually he's like, you're not seeing everything. And I guess this is kind of reflected, I think Germani says it once, he's like, you know, I read all these books and I can't figure out what the twist is because I can't see the bigger picture. And this reflects in then again very meta in the plot of the film, because it turns out there's not just one killer, there is another one. So like I said, the conservative TV host was the first one, but then we see him getting murdered. And it turns out, shock twist, that Peter Neal is also a killer. So again, we see this duality between the two killers. The conservative TV host kind of does it out of like this obsession with Neal's fiction, whereas Neal does it because he thinks it's part of his fiction. So what did you think about that double twist?
I mean, I love it because when you think about, like, you know, this film is Argento fighting back his critics and people saying that his films are trash or that they're worthless, they're damaging, they're misogynistic, all these things. It's like, you know, the idea that in his kind of want to say this, he actually, Peter Neal's character, which is, you know, serves as kind of Argento, I guess, becomes the killer. So actually does become this destructive evil force in society. So it's kind of like there's a real playfulness there. There's such kind of wit in Argento's films that I think that, you know, I've been to a few, I'm sure many Argento fans have experienced this, where they might have gone to see films with audiences, and there's sometimes a slightly annoying laughter that's like, okay, yeah, we get it's old, we get the dubbing snaff, you know, these kind of things. Like, just get into the film, just like give over to it, let it embrace you. And actually, then sometimes there's jokes or there's really witty stuff, and people don't laugh because I think they think sometimes Argento's a joke, but actually, people don't realize that Argento's like incredibly funny with what he's doing, and he's really, you know, he's very, very aware. I think all his films, you know, especially kind of from Deep Red onwards, there's a kind of meta quality to them. There's always something that he's saying about himself, about his career, about, you know, criticisms about his films. You know, it's so present in Tenebrae. Like, it's like unavoidable. It's just there. Like, it's not subtext. It's just text in that film. Even in that, like, you know, you think about the kind of comparison to Scream and that kind of, this being his kind of equivalent, which absolutely, I completely agree. But even in that, it's like Scream's very obvious in what it's doing. But you could watch Tenebrae and not realize that that's what it is, you know, if you didn't really kind of understand or know about Argento. So I think that's another thing that's so great and makes Tenebrae so rewatchable, is the more that you know his films and you know, the more you know about the kind of context in which they were made, the more unfolds.
I have two favorite parts in this film, and it's kind of towards the end. So we see Neil do a fake death, and I just think it's the greatest fake death ever. So he gets caught out by Giovanni and his assistant, and he pretends to slice his throat with a straight razor, and it turns out it's a fake straight razor, and all the blood, like, he's got a button that he presses. It's amazing. I didn't see it coming at all. And then my most absolute favorite scene is where he gets killed, which is a hark back to Bird with the Crystal Plumage, and he gets killed by the sculpture. And I just think it's like the best end set. And then we've got his assistant just screaming incessantly.
The greatest end shot in a film is like amazing, isn't it? Just, and it goes so long with Daria Nicolodi just screaming.
I
love the idea. I love the fact that he's killed by the sculpture as well. I think, you know, Tenebrae is such a film about modernity, and it's very much, you know, there's it feels so stripped back compared to his other work initially. You know, it's very white, it's very kind of day, you know, sun-drenched, it's very kind of clean and crisp, and it feels really at odds with his kind of work previously, which always feels so kind of textured and so kind of, you know, tactile and all these different things. And this feels cold and sleek and kind of icy to a certain extent. And the idea that, you know, the kind of killer is killed by this kind of ugly piece of modern art that kind of, you know, spears him at the end is, again, there's a kind of playfulness and there's kind of wit there that, that, you know, people sometimes, people giggle at those moments. You think, like, I think you're laughing at the wrong thing here, but, you know, as long as you're having a nice time, I guess it's all right.
Yeah, why not? So would you recommend Tenebrae to horror fans?
Absolutely. It is, yeah, it's, you know, for me, it's Argento's masterpiece. I think that it's a film that genuinely just gets better and better every time you see it. I mean, I've seen it 20 plus times now, and I always get something new from it. I think it always makes me think of something, something different. And I think there's so much enjoyment to be had as well about just kind of reading about and thinking about the film when it was made. And, like, you know, basically one of my favorite kind of stories of the film. I don't know. I swear I read this, so I might be confused with something else, but I think this is true, that John Saxon was, like, interviewed about the film once and was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And apparently, you know, I think John Saxon had kind of alcohol issues and made a lot of films, and I think it was just one that he forgot about, which is, you know, I guess kind of sad, but, you know, maybe a great testament to all of the films that he was in, because I think you think of all the things I've done in my life, I can't remember them all. You know, why do you remember one of these films that you made?
That's true. And he was a stalwart for Giallo as well in general. So
yeah, you know, kind of played the same character in each of them as well. So it was like, I get that he'd be like, which one is which? But I always think that, that's very funny. But I was going to say as well, like, my thinking about that kind of end sequence, my favorite, one of my favorite moments is the reveal where the guy kind of leans down and then Peter Neal stood behind him with the kind of obscured thing, which was kind of completely stolen and by Brian De Palma in Raising Cain years later. And I think that the kind of Hitchcock Argento, De Palma, you know, kind of the comparisons with the three of them. I think that, you know, Hitchcock is more closely aligned with De Palma, I think, than he is with Hitchcock. But I think that De Palma's more aligned with Hitchcock than he is with Argento. So they kind of make this interesting triptych of kind of, of filmmakers. And I think that, you know, when you look at something like Sisters from De Palma, and it's like, you know, half it's like a Hitchcock film in the kind of plotting, and then it turns into this weird, dreamy kind of, you know, fragmented collection of memories and scenes, and it becomes almost, you know, quite kind of experimental in its approach. I feel like that kind of end of De Palma really speaks to a lot of kind of Argento's work. And I think, you know, there's a lot of kind of, that, you know, they're making work at the same time. Jessica Harper, who was in Phantom of the Paradise for De Palma, there was then in Suspiria. And I think there's kind of, you know, lots of ways in which the two of them have really interesting careers, which kind of reflect each other in some kind of ways. But like, you know, the Raising Cain steal from Tenebrae is one of the most shameless thefts in film history.
Yeah, that scene, because I was watching it and I was like, why is his ear waggling?
Yeah, like I know. It's like, well, you see it a little bit. And actually, even that is like, oh, that's really creepy. And then you're like,
I get it now. But it's such a good reveal. Like, yeah, it was one of those moments that, you know, where you gasp audibly. Fantastic. I would definitely recommend it to horror fans, whether you're an Argento fan or not, just for the fact that apparently it's got a kill like every 10 minutes, which I think is pretty cool for
and a kind film. Of that's what we want, isn't it, really? You know, we're easily pleased,
right? I mean, look, listen, yeah, I think it's great. Like you said, John Saxon's in it. John Saxon is in one of my favorite slashers, Black Christmas. So yeah, I love it. I love it. So let's move on to my choice of film, which was Deep Red, aka Profondo Rosso.
I can feel death in this room. A present. You have killed, and you will kill again.
The murderer is a schizophrenic paranoid. Anyone who kills with such frenzy surely does it in a state of temporary madness. And when he kills, he must recreate these specific conditions.
A man in a brown raincoat walking away from the building.
You're doing messing around with this business anyway.
I told you to stay out of it.
It is a 1975 giallo film, and it was co-written by Argento and Bernardino Zapponi. And like you said, they're so difficult to give a synopsis, but I will try. It opens on a parapsychological event, possibly, where this psychic starts getting messages from the audience, and she's like, oh my god, and freaks out. She says there's someone in the audience that has really bad intentions, but she can also hear like a child's song at the same time. And she returns to her apartment, which is, she's in Italy at the moment, and from her from the street, there is a piano teacher and his friend, Carlo. And he can see into her apartment, and he sees her getting horribly murdered by a disguised figure. And so, of course, in true giallo form, they never just leave it to the cops. They've always gotta investigate it themselves. So he becomes kind of embroiled in this murderous plot going on, and it brings him to like an old house where he discovers a painting on the wall, and then he's got to trace the origins of this painting, and it's just, it's wild. Like, this is, and you know what, okay, sorry, side note, I have ADHD.
and shit goes south.
Yeah. Side note, in all these giallos, they go to a crime scene and they're just playing with stuff in the crime scene, and I'm like, what is it? Stop spoiling the crime scene. That was just what I noticed. Very bad police work. So are you a fan of Deep Red?
Very much. I mean, Deep Red is, I guess, in many ways, like Deep Red and Suspiria, a kind of, you know, I wouldn't disagree with anyone saying they're his best films in terms of, you know, his most accomplished, his most kind of complete, or the most satisfying in some ways. I think that Deep Red probably is, if someone said to me, like, you know, give me one Giallo to watch, I'm going to watch one Giallo in my life, I would say Deep Red. Even though Tenebrae is my favourite, Deep Red is the most perfect one. It's the one that kind of does everything. You know, it's like every single component of Giallo, it has in there, and it does it perfectly. It's like, that is, you know, he'd made the first, his first three, that the Animal Trilogy, and, you know, with a, after a brief kind of, I was going to say something mean then, but, you know, after the 5 days, which isn't my favorite, it's kind of historical, kind of comedic romp. He went back to the Giallo with Deep Red, and, you know, it's like you could see someone that had just really perfected what they were doing. And it's like, it's the perfect balance between logic and illogic. It's the perfect balance of the kind of operatic and grandiose, but also it's really moving at times, and it's got a real kind of emotional core to it. You know, there's playfulness with gender that we've talked about. There's lots of stuff around queerness in there. The kills are incredible. The set pieces are just absolutely astonishing. You know, it is a pretty perfect film. It's almost like, you know, sometimes when it's like, it's the one that everyone loves, so you're like, do you know what? Everyone loves that one enough. I'm going to go for the number two that people don't love quite as much. So, but yeah, I think Deep Red's a pretty perfect film.
Yeah. So let's talk about the gender and the queerness thing, because we see Carlo, who is Marcus's friend. He's an alcoholic. And when Marcus goes to his house, his mother says he's at this address. And he goes and he finds that Carlo is actually gay or queer. And yeah, it's one of those moments that you expect Marcus, as a typical, what is it they say in Tenebrae, hairy macho man. You expect him to be like, to have this huge like reaction where it's like really disgusting looking back on it. But he doesn't have, I mean, he's shocked, but he doesn't have that horrible reaction to it, which I found quite nice. And it, you know, Carlo's lover obviously plays with gender fluidity, but it wasn't making a joke out of them. And I really liked that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's, you know, there's in just the scenes with Carlo and Marcus, and then the scene at Carlo's apartment with them, with their partner, it's, there's a lot going on in those scenes. Mm. It's really actually very complex relationships that are happening there. And Argento really handles them very deftly. Mm. You know, there's a real kind of lightness with which he does, but there's also a lot of kind of unspoken backstory there. There's a moment where Carlo's lover kind of says, you know, they're just an incredibly sad person, and just, but they have such love for them. And it's really heartbreaking. There's something really real about it. And I think that there is something about, which, and I actually don't think that Argento probably meant or knew that he was doing this, or this is his intention. I think he's always been interested in queer characters, and I think he's always been interested in being like, queer people can be different things, and they can be evil, but they can be good, they can be sad, they can be happy, whatever. But he, you know, he has this character who's depressive, he's an alcoholic, doesn't link his sexuality with those things, which is great. We see that too often. But at the same time, it does speak to a sadness within him, which is not something that's unheard of for queer people. I think there is something, you know, you through the film understand Carlos's backstory and his family life, and there's kind of stuff there that led to his depression. But also there is something about being an outsider, being a marginalized community, that can, you know, it has an impact on people. So I think there's something which actually very, very smartly can look at the kind of mental health of queer people, but doesn't say that queer people are all depressed or they're all killers. You know, it's actually pretty wild, the kind of nuanced ways in which he develops those characters in such a small amount of time.
Yeah. And it's definitely something that I was really impressed with, because as we know, like 70s films, you're kind of like, ooh.
And also it's like, you know, and his partner's played by Geraldine Hooper, who's a cis female actress, which is really interesting for the time as well. That was the decision that he made. But, you know, and later on we talked about in Tenebrae that there's the casting of Eva Robbins, who is a trans actress in the flashbacks. And I think those two things kind of speak to each other as well. I think that, you know, he cast a cis female to play what we kind of understand to be like a genderqueer character. We don't know if they're trans or non-binary, to play that role. And then you kind of think that he's thinking, well, you know, who are the people that are playing these parts? You know, who am I kind of getting? Like, what's this saying? If I'm going to say something, I'm going to have queer people in my films. Let's cast queer people. Let's cast a trans person in this role. I think that there's a kind of responsibility that he has there, like that he takes on, which is, again, something we don't see enough of now, let alone, you know, 40 years ago in like Italian exploitation horror movies.
So talking of Carlo, it's kind of like we talked about Tenebrae. Argento does this thing where he's like, you're not looking at the full picture, you know, don't think this is the end. And so we find out the drawing is Carlo's, and at the end it's kind of implied that Carlo has been the killer, but of course, again, double twist, it is not the case, and it turns out to be his mother, which is the strangest thing, because all through the film we've been seeing, of course, because Dario Argento plays the black gloved hands, we see like a very male form, and it turns out to be this tiny little woman, and you're like,
these hairy macho hands.
Right? You're like, very believable. So yes, it turns out to be the mother. And I was just wondering, because this topic has kind of come up quite recently with a lot of new releases, do you think that this was part of like a hagsploitation style film? Do you think it could be said that this is a hagsploitation film?
I think that I hadn't really thought of it. Hold on, let me. I was just sort of about to move on. I was like, I need to think about this for a second. I mean, I think maybe, you could say it's a kind of precursor to those things. Yeah. I think the thing that's kind of different about Deep Red is that actually Carla's mother is not a hag through the film. Do you know what I mean? I think that's the big difference is, you know, with a film like Barbarian or something, it's like, you know, this giant, physically grotesque you know, kind of female identified character that you see. And it's kind of, you're invited to be repulsed by them, and then it's like at the end you're like, oh, they're not so bad, and maybe I can overlook their kind of grotesque physical appearance and see them as something more, whereas this is kind of opposite of that. So I think that, you know, this is like, for me, this is more a comment on you know, whereas you could argue that that kind of hagsploitation stuff is rooted in a kind of misogyny, that actually this is coming from a place of a critique of a kind of male underestimation of women, which is something that I think that Marcus does consistently throughout the film, you know, with the Dario Nicolodi character. And he's like, literally just like, you're not as strong as me, you're not as clever as me. And it's like every time she's like proves in different ways that she is. And it's like, you know, he basically sees women as a really unthreatening, particularly a physically unthreatening presence. And actually the biggest threat in the film, the thing that he's been chasing for that was right there, is an old woman. You know, I think it's more of a kind of play on that for me than a kind of hagsploitation type thing. But I think it's really interesting. I think that the link is kind of there. And I think if you were doing like a history of, you'd have this kind of in there, but it feels like it's maybe coming from a more critical place. Whereas I think that some of the other stuff like Barbarian, which I like Barbarian, I think it's great fun in lots of ways, but something about that and the kind of filmmaker point of view and what they're doing, it feels a little bit like, oh, this was a little bit off. Whereas Deep Red, I think also, again, because there's so much complexity with gender and sexuality in his films, it doesn't feel like he's labeling one person as one thing.
I just want to touch on the violence.
What do you think? Do you think with the hagsploitation thing, is it something that you kind of, does it something that kind of sits awkwardly with you, or?
No, funnily enough, and like I've seen Barbarian, I've seen X, and I would be quite critical of those films because I do feel they're making a certain type of womanhood monstrous. Whereas I feel like with Deep Red, it's more along the lines of what you said, that it's this underestimation of how women, certain types of women, say like mothers, homemakers, are expected to be. Whereas, you know, as a mother, I have, you know, a different side. It's not a murderous side, I promise. But
never say never.
Right situation. you know, I do have another side to me that isn't just mother, homemaker, wife, etc., etc. I do think maybe its depiction of mental health and these kind of like mental illnesses, maybe quite, because this is the whole thing, her husband wanted to put her away in an institution, and this is why she killed him, and this is why Carlo, because he witnessed it, is quite depressed and obviously traumatized by it. So I do think it's quite clumsy in its telling of that. But again, it was the 70s, you know.
Absolutely.
Perhaps this was more like a say on like, hey, don't just put women away in institutions for, you know, she probably just had like, what do they used to call it? Like melancholia. She was probably slightly depressed and he was like, I'm putting you in an institution. And she was like, fuck that. You're not doing that to me. So yeah, I can kind of understand it. But I guess at first glance, you're like, ooh, you know, not all people with mental illness are murderers.
Yeah, no, I think that's really true. I think that, and you know, so many of Giallo cinema and, you know, Argento's work is, you know, those kind of like the keys that unlock everything is this kind of deep, you know, psychological trauma that someone's experienced. And the kind of revelation of that and the way that's kind of explained is often either kind of clunky or just very simplistic. And I think it does feel, sometimes it's like, oh, there's so much complexity in certain things. Mm. And actually this is something where the complexity is not there as much. I think that, you know, the thing with the Deep Red kind of, you know, the reasons for the killing and, you know, what kind of inspired in the first place. I think, you know, you again see that kind of throughout Argento's work. I think, you know, you see that again in like opera, and you see, you know, the kind of run of like opera and trauma and the Stendhal syndrome, you know, they're all in some ways about kind of female subjugation in differing levels of success, I think. You know, I think that I appreciate that he's, again, trying to say something. I don't think that's necessarily where he excels the most. I think there's always something super interesting about his casting, though. And I think particularly with Dario Nicolodi, who was his partner for many years, and then Asia, his daughter, from kind of trauma onwards, and the kind of positions that he puts them in the films, and particularly with kind of Asia in the later work, is, you know, difficult, uncomfortable, problematic, interesting, you know, all these different things. But it does make me sometimes, that's when I sometimes get like, oh, Dario, I don't know if I trust you completely now that you've just done that. But, you know, I think there's something, you know, I never want to kind of be like, oh, it's fine, or just kind of excuse something, or to kind of make something trivial. But there is something about that edge of danger and that edge of kind of like, oh, actually, I can't trust you all the time, which does sometimes add something with horror movies. And sometimes it's like, you know, there's plenty of kind of pretty homophobic horror movies out there that I really love, and there's something about that in them that gives them something to me, and it gives it maybe something racked against, but it doesn't make me like dismiss them. So I think that there's something, I think it's just that thing we've been kind of talking about the whole way. It's like, even at his most simplistic, there's still maybe something a bit more than that. There's still something more to kind of unravel or to kind of unfold or to think about. And he's also not kind of defensive when he talks about that kind of stuff as well. I think, you know, he's pretty kind of blunt and upfront when he says things. Yeah. He says some really, really problematic things as well. But I think that he's, you know, the complexities of his work, for the most part, kind of speak for themselves.
Yeah, I will say about like the whole exploitation subject, I do get a bit of Whatever Happened to Baby Jane in this. Like we've got
kind of wig and the little curls and
right, like, so we've got Baby Jane, who is kind of, obviously we don't see that because we see it from kind of Blanche's point of view, but she is kind of you know, she's thought of as this kind of slightly kooky old lady who just wants to get back to her heyday, and we don't, you know, we know that she is gaslighting and abusive and, you know, murderous. And it's kind of the same with the mother in this, that she, you know, when she first meets Marcus, he's like, I'm a pianist, and she's like, an engineer, and he's like, no, a pianist. She's like, a pianist and an engineer. And so she's really like unassuming and kind of, you know, like we said, non-suspecting, when really she's got her head screwed on and she knows everything, you know, she knows exactly what's going on. So yeah, I really like seeing that vein as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. There's always like, there's something almost like the kind of Baby Jane comparison as well. There's something kind of drag about it as well sometimes. That's kind of there, which I always really enjoy. But yeah, he's I think it's, I always think I've got one kind of point of view, or not one point of view, but like I think certain things and I'm like, this is where I stand on his approach to this, or this is where I stand on this. And then I'll watch rewatch another film and I'm like, oh, that's really complicated it. Or that's, you know, that's actually kind of slightly shifted my thought when I was doing the video essay, which is on YouTube if you want to watch it. I was kind of breaking down like three things that define Argento, and I was like choosing his like approach to like color and cinematography, gender and sexuality, and like narrative or kind of logic and illogic were the three things. And even in that, I was just like literally going through a million different tangents, and I was like, how do I say this like really succinctly when actually so many of his films contradict each other, and so many films go in different directions and take things in different ways. So, you know, I think that ultimately one Argento film, as much as what you were saying at the beginning, which is really true, like you can identify an Argento film instantly, you know, it just has that quality of it. Everyone is quite different in lots of ways, and there are ones that are much more problematic than others. And you know, that is something which makes him such a exciting filmmaker for me. You know, I think that you can never completely pin him down, and I think that people think they can more than they can. And I think maybe that's something as well that I kind of resist when people like, he's the Italian Hitchcock, because I think that actually another thing that Hitchcock was pretty clear in his kind of, you know, take on gender. He was pretty clear in his kind of let's say politics. They don't really kind of feature directly in his film, but you know, his kind of worldview, it feels like it's pretty consistent throughout. And I think that Argento's feels sometimes erratic, and it feels sometimes like, I don't get how this is the same as this person. I find that exciting. I guess it can be annoying or frustrating to some people, but I always like to be surprised. You know, there's always that kind of accusation as well with Argento. It's like first half of his career is good, second half is bad. And you know, I by no means am I saying that there is work kind of post-trauma that rivals Tenebrae or Suspiria or Deep Red. I think they are, you know, the first, you know, from Deep Red to Opera, it's maybe without Phenomenon so much, but Phenomena so much, but Phenomenon, the John Travolta film. without Phenomena, but I just pretty, you know, incredible run of masterpieces that he made. But I think there's some stuff after that which is really interesting. But I think it's so difficult because as a newcomer, not knowing his work, those films maybe don't pop or they don't kind of do as much you want them to, but actually as someone who loves him, they feel like a bit of a disappointment because they don't reach the heights of his earlier stuff. So I think there's a moment, and I'm kind of hoping that this will happen during the season, is that some fans that have maybe dismissed some of the later stuff can come back and rewatch some of it and not have that weight of expectation and not have that kind of like sense of like inevitable disappointment that's going to come with a new Argento film. Because I think there's like so many good things that he's made post, you know, 1990 that really deserve to be kind of sung about. You know, Dracula 3D not being one of them. Although that CGI praying mantis is pretty wild.
So what do you think Deep Red's what do you think is Deep Red's legacy on horror, like modern horror? Do you think it has any sort of legacy?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's the perfect giallo film, you know. That's it, like it's the defining one. I think that because you know, with Argento, what's kind of incredible about him is, you know, with Bird with Crystal Plumage, it was the one that, you know, he took the kind of blueprint that Mario Bava had set, and then he made it a really commercial, you know, but at the same time, super artistic, super kind of inventive, exciting piece of cinema. But he brought it to the masses. He made it popular. He made it, you know, just made it a thing, you know, made it. It was the one that kind of launched the giallo in terms of like international recognition. And then a few years later, he then just made the perfect one. You know, it's like literally he defines giallo, and it doesn't mean that he created it. It doesn't mean that actually what he did was, you know, he couldn't have done it without Bava or some of the people that came before. But his stamp on it is undeniable. You know, he absolutely is the kind of master of the giallo, as far as I'm concerned. With a little side note to a side shout out to Sergio Martino, who's my other favorite giallo filmmaker. But yeah, I think that there will never be another giallo like that. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, and giallos that kind of come exist now, which are very few and far between, and they're kind of different. Like you might get a kind of neo giallo, which is kind of a little bit infused with this, but I can't imagine we're going to see a resurgence of that kind of old school giallo film. So I just don't think that it's ever going to be rivaled. I think that at the end of time, or to the end of cinema, which is the same thing, they will be, you know, that Deep Purple will always be held as the ultimate masterpiece.
Yeah, and I think especially when you can see, you can clearly see its influence in films like Last Night in Soho. Like, that is clearly a redo of Deep Red. And I think, it, you know, the fact that this film still has a hold over modern horror film makers is incredible.
And it also features, I think, you know, and as someone who, even as a child, was never really scared by horror films, I think it features, like, top three most terrifying moments of all time with the kind of dummy mannequin, like, little doll that yeah. comes in. It's, honestly, it's, like, terrifying. Every time
it is.
Like this. Yeah, and it's also quickly followed by then one of the most, like, you know, just squirmingly horrific moments of violence with his teeth on the mantelpiece, which I think is absolutely one of the nastiest. Love it.
Yeah, I think James Wan even said that moment influenced Billy the Puppet from Saw, which, yeah, that is terrifying. I forget about, every time I see this film, I forget about it, and then it shows up and you're like, Jesus Christ, what the hell is that?
So essentially, we have Dario to blame for Saw. Shit. This is a terrible legacy.
Yeah, would you recommend Deep Red to horror fans?
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, it's brilliant. I'd recommend it to non-horror fans too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hate to keep going back to the gore, but it is me. It has a lot of relatable violence in it. So the scene in which Carlo tries to escape and he's somehow dragged along by a garbage truck, and I could almost feel the concrete burns.
Mm.
And then he gets his head run over. And it's just, I love gore that makes you cringe because, you know, we don't know what it's like to be stabbed or shot, but we do kind of know what it's like to fall on pavement and get concrete burns. So just, yeah. So I love it for its relatable violence.
There's something as well that he does in Deep Red, and he does this in a lot of his films. I think Deep Red is the most kind of full example of it, is that his kind of close-ups in point of penetration and his kind of close-ups in moments in which the body experiences violence. You know, there's something about it that is like, you feel it, you know, it kind of cuts in and you inhabit this body, which is kind of, you know, penetrated or, you know, bludgeoned or whatever it might be. There's something, you know, he's really smart with what he does and the way he does it. Cause, you know, you might think about, you know, there's a lot of, we mentioned before, kind of censorship with Argento's films, you know, some of them, like Tenebrae was one that was like on the video nasty list in the early 1980s, which is just crazy. But, you know, there is something that his films aren't that violent to justify that kind of hysteria, but maybe it is just to do with the way you feel the violence in his films. You know, it feels like, ouch, you know, it hurts, some of them. And I think that it's one of those things that I always think that's, you know, people accuse horror filmmakers or horror fans of being like sadistic, like you're sadist watching this stuff and getting pleasure from it. But it's like, actually, it's not that. It's more like masochistic watching an Argento film, or, you know, it's about like feeling that pain on you. It's not about inflicting it on someone else. And I think that he's really aware of that. And I think the way that he films violence, and he films particularly, you know, kind of gore, is about putting you right in there with it.
Yeah. So if someone had a straight razor to your throat and was like, I'm going to need you to pick one out of these two films, which one would you choose?
It's going to have to be Tenebrae. Mm-hmm. I think that, like I said, it's my fave. I love it unconditionally. And I think that part of my love for it as well kind of comes from that thing of like underestimating it at first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a film that's like, it's, you know, it worked. Like, it worked hard to win its place as my number one. And it will never be dethroned.
Yeah, like before seeing Tenebrae, I think I would have said Deep Red, but Tenebrae, I just think it's like, it's wilder, it's more kind of out there, and I just like, I know the influence Deep Red has had on the horror genre, but I think I just love Tenebrae that little more.
Oh my god, this has made my day. This is the best news I've ever heard. The thing is, and then watch it again, you're gonna love it even more.
Exactly. So Before we end, I usually ask my guests, what is your favorite horror film?
My favorite horror film is Carrie, the original, of course. Just that, in case anyone was thinking, like,
Could you imagine?
I'm a Murex fan. Yeah, the original Carrie is my favorite. It's a film, and I mean this in no, kind of faux dramatic way, but the film that like changed my life. It was the one that took me from just that kind of avid, so rabid consumer of horror, and just like anything will do, and I just love any gore and violence and horror, 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 to just sitting there and being like, wow, horror can be this. Like, horror can be this affecting, and it can be, this is where the horror can come from. It's like there's, yeah, it was just, it never ever fails to astound me. I think it's, for all its flaws, I guess, which I see more as I get older, and as I become, as I think differently, and I, grow as a person. You see flaws in it, but none of them will ever take away what it meant to me when I first saw it. And I still, still this the only one of the only films that will make me teary every time I watch it.
Great. So before we go, would you like
What's your
to
favorite?
my
I'm
favorite
sure
is
maybe your listeners already know this, but I need to know.
everyone I've ever come into contact with knows what my favorite film is. It's The Exorcist. It is
I've
my
not heard of
all-time.
that
Really? Have you not
one.
heard of The Exorcist? It's just a little film. Yeah, that is like you said, that changed my life. Like when I saw it changed my life. I rewatch it, if not once, at least twice a year. I'm obsessed.
Comfort film, isn't it? It's
It's
like,
so comforting. And it's so
yeah.
funny because I come from obviously a very Catholic country, and a lot of people think like it's a very staunchly Catholic film, which I guess it is. But for some reason, I'm just like, I freaking love it for everything. It's such a well-rounded film. Sorry, before this turns into an Exorcist episode. So before we go, would you like to plug anything, including your social media handles, so people can keep up with your mysterious future endeavors?
Yeah, and if anyone wants to give me any work, that'd be great as well. On Twitter, I'm Michael J. Blythe, and then I'm on Instagram, at Thad Beaumont, which, if any Stephen King film fans out there will know, is the lead character from The Dark Half. God, I'm such a nerd. And yeah, so like I mentioned, the Argento season is at BFI South Bank all through May. So come and watch some stuff. It'd be fun. I'm introducing a screening of Opera on Monday the 8th. And then also on Friday is the talk with Piranha Beth Bond. And then on Saturday, the I can't remember the date, will be Argento doing a Q&A for Deep Red and an introduction for Tenebrae. So
Okay. You
lots
mean you're
of
not
Argento.
watching Eurovision? What are you
Yeah. But no, but they're in the afternoon as well. So you can then chill home, watch, have an afternoon of horror, and then an evening of horror, be perfect. So yeah, that's everything that's happening there. And I mentioned before, but my video essay on Argento, which is called Strange Phenomena, is on YouTube to watch.
Great. I'll definitely check that out. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
So that was my chat there with Michael Blythe about Dario Argento and his two films, Tenebrae from 1982 and Deep Red slash Profondo Rosso from 1975. Let me know what you think. Are you a fan of Dario Argento? What do you think is his ultimate film? I know a lot of people are going to say Suspiria, but. Look, listen, he's giallo. There's a reason he is the maestro of terror. It is for his giallo. So like Michael said, and like I said in the introduction, the BFI are holding their Dario Argento season where they are screening 4K restorations of some of his greatest work. I think it's 17 films, possibly. Don't quote me on that. I will be there on Friday the 12th to see Dario Argento in conversation with Prano Bailey Bond, the director of Censor, as well as the screening of Suspiria afterwards. So if you're there, do come and say hello to me. I am the girl with the half green hair. Yes, I can't wait. I'm so excited. I love being in London. It is my grounding city. It's where I go to recharge, and I am so excited. And if you can't get to that, then make sure you go and see these 4K restorations of Dario Argento's films on the big screen, even if you've seen them a billion times before. Just imagine what they're going to look like on the big screen. Amazing. And you know what? If you've never seen an Argento film, go see them. Amazing. And I will super hard recommend Tenebrae or Deep Red. Just saying. So yes, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Don't forget to like, review, subscribe on whatever podcast platform you are listening to me on. You can follow me on Twitter at @what_scream, as well as on Instagram at @whatascream. And as always, stay horrific. Goodbye.